Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira. And today we will be discussing aging and caregiving amongst our peers, honestly. Mm-hmm. This show is about us.
Yeah, so we talked last time about killing the savior complex and how coming down from the idea that you need to save the world and taking rest for yourself is important. One thing that we can't escape is those around us that have raised us and participated right. in our lives as they age, that requires something of us.
Yes.
And so we have to do,
And I believe the conversation was going on when we were younger and not worried about it, you know, our late teens and early 20s, describing our parents caring for their parents while also caring for us. As we have been blessed to grow older, now we're in that position. And there are just some different considerations to be made. Like the previous generation, we find ourselves giving a lot of care to our parents while also still trying to finish out caring for our kids. We're also very much so focused on self-care, too, and making sure that we're our healthiest selves.
So I think those two things are new because our previous generation, they had their children younger than us.
Yes.
So we waited until, you know, late 20s, 30s, you know, in some cases early 40s to have our children.
In most cases.
And self-care was not a thing for them. So caring for children while caring for your parents, I think that's starting, you know, in mass with Gen X and below, Gen X and millennials. And then caring for yourself at the same time is something that's unique to these generations now.
Most definitely. I think the prioritization of caring for yourself is something that's unique to us. Self-care looks different across the generations, just like aging does. How we age is going to look different from what we're confronting with our parents, how our children come into caring for us. I feel like we're doing some things and we're going to make it so that, you know, maybe they don't have to do some of the same things that we're doing. Mm-hmm. But most definitely, I think more people can identify with showing up for their parents, not just physically or even emotionally as they confront, you know, just how their life is changing mm-hmm. and their abilities are changing. But we're also showing up financially. I mean, we grew up with sitcoms with the grandmother living in the suite, you know, or, you know, somebody living at the house, the auntie or whatever. When you consider some of our economic realities, some people are already living that multi-generational household. Mm. But what you will find and what I have found is that for a lot of us, and this is just a keep it real conversation, our parents didn't really have full retirement plans. What they had was children, much like their parents had children. Mm. And it was just an understood thing that, you know, somebody's going to help you out. That's what you hope.
Yeah, you have a lot of kids to get your chances up.
Something, I mean,
it's like buying a lot of tickets.
Over the generations, we've done that. You know, back in the day, people had a bunch of kids because those kids turned into human capital. They were helping you around the house, helping you with your business and all of that. So definitely there's not as many hands on deck, and that can lead to a lot of pressure because everybody don't see it the same way as far as what's required of them or what they should have to do. Right. And one of the hidden barriers to caregiving and the ability to give care and the ability to receive it actually has nothing to do with finances. It's your emotional health to be prepared for these transitions. You know, are you communicating well? Have you cleared the cobwebs? Have you, you know, some of those things that you swept under the rug, have you gotten at them yet? So I just think it's important to discuss this. And I think the reason why I brought it to you, like, oh, let's talk about this on Faith Uncut, is because just like we've confronted some of the inaccurate or just not useful information that keeps people in a controlled position as far as other relationships, their marriages, or maybe even how they interact with their children, there is a lot of information around how we interact with our parents that when you begin to peel back the layers, these relationships could be the source of some issues that, you know, could prevent us from showing up as our best self or our most authentic self, especially when the person in question now is no longer the person in, let's say, overall active, able-bodied leadership. So it's not so much, oh, I got to do what my dad said because he's the man of the house. He's not the man of your house. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, I have to you know, make sure that I show my mother all types of deference or respect. Even though, you know, again, now we have language to discuss our parents as people, right?
Yeah, a part of that, I think, has to deal with what how we handled the transition from adolescence, childhood, you know,
into adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Some people didn't manage it well. So, for instance, you cussed in middle school and you cussed as an adult, but for some reason, like, you still can't cuss around your parents. It's weird.
Yeah, that's
some
not me.
So, right. So, you know, how did that transition work? Were you seen as a full adult? You know, did you have to leave the house in order to get those freedoms? And then,
right,
are your parents or parent, whatever, are they comfortable coming to you for advice for things? How does that work? And when y'all disagree,
yeah,
about something that's an important decision,
absolutely.
So the transition informs the effectiveness of this caregiving,
absolutely. And really, you know, again, this is such a powerful outreach where I just think that sometimes we touch on things and we'll get feedback where it's like, wow, I thought I was the only one, or I'm only having this conversation amongst, you know, trusted friends. But everywhere I look, especially as my friendship group gets older, now we have considerations about our parents. And it's the good thing, the positive thing, is that it's making us take more seriously our plans and how we show up in various relationships, where not so much we're trying to goad somebody into doing something for us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not so much the manipulation, but the truth of the matter is healthy relationships will provide a support mechanism for you in the future. Mm-hmm. Having a healthy relationship with your spouse kind of ensures that you can get to that death do us part, right? Having a healthy relationship with your children where they can express themselves, be creative, be, you know, be critical, be open, and just a bunch of other things, that actually helps down the line when you might need them to demonstrate to you that they understand, that they're able to lead, that they are able to take on the protection role, that they are able to make decisions, like you just said. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to kind of dive right in, because we're not the only people going through it, but it's happening at a rapid rate. And like I said, we can't afford to not show up for our village, especially the elder part of our village. Mm-hmm. This is where we still get a critical amount of our information and our wisdom, you know, even if some of the wisdom is what not to do. Mm-hmm. If you don't plan for something, you are preparing to fail at it. You are preparing to just be blown in the wind. So I don't like when people are going through that. Like I said, I deal with this, you know, 9 to 5 a lot. So we're just going to jump in and just see, you know, what's going on. What does this look like?
Yeah, I think the thing that's important for me in my relationship with my dad, lost my mom, but I see things as reverse now. Mm. So where I find myself in the position that I've always known my father in. So yes. I'm the one that's, you know, teaching him about the world that he's living in that's new to him,
right,
in terms of technology and things like that. I'm teaching him, hey, listen, don't give them people your information.
Oh, my gosh.
That, you know, that this is how you're going to get into trouble. I'm making sure that they take their pills. Mm-hmm. I'm making sure. I'm not changing diapers yet, but I know that might be coming
at
some point.
It does.
You know what I mean? So everything that happened to me is now going to be happening from me to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to make sure that I got the patience to do it like it was done with me.
Right.
And so it's an interesting change. It's an interesting cycle of life that you get to be the parent to your parents as they age. Because it gets frustrating.
It does. I think I've experienced this more recently with my grandmother, who transitioned in 2021. Definitely from an older generation. My mom is in that boomer generation. But I stepped in and assisted my mother with the care of her mother. And it was, if I had to describe it, was the best internship, because it just gave me a glimpse into, one, how she was serving her elder, her mm-hmm. parent, but also helping me understand what might be asked of me when it's for her.
Yeah.
And my mom is about 22 years younger than her mom. So, you know, God give her health and strength. I get 22 more years, yeah. But my grandmother's abilities over the last 20 years definitely changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not require the same amount of participation from my mother as far as, you know, for my life or powering me up. But I can't say the same for the economic system that we are currently residing in. So like people are working longer. It's so crazy how capitalism will like misrepresent that. Like, remember commercials and it was like, oh, the old guy has a job at McDonald's and he just feels so helpful, whatever. You get old enough and you realize that's because his pension is not the same, or he didn't have one at all. He didn't have any security with maybe the jobs that he worked 50 years or so for. He didn't have what the generation before him had, which was company pension till you die. Right. You know, they begin to change these things, even those of us who have public service jobs, we don't have what people 25 years ago had.
You know what, though? You also realize the type of jobs that offer security in your aging years.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and this is no shots at any jobs, but you do learn these things. Like, so for instance, I may be a construction worker and not have anything like a pension. I may be a YouTuber and I just don't have it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So everything doesn't offer the same type of security. And for a long time, you don't have to consider that until you do.
Until you do. And the whole thing about it is, you know, and I can't speak to everybody's experience, but a lot of times when you are dealing with a lack of knowledge that will tell you how to target your savings, your investments, how to move your money around. Again, you'll be thinking, oh, I have time for that. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, you know, was able to set aside for a rainy day fund. Right. And not everyone, you know, unfortunately had two incomes, adult incomes in their house where they could maybe make different decisions. I've seen these things kind of come into manifest with aging where it's like, and now you don't have the same abilities across 40 hours per week to make up the income.
So how do we deal with that? So it's a privilege to be able to take care of your aging parent or grandparent, because they did that for you and you couldn't pay them back any other way except this.
Right.
And so to do it is good. But when you get into a situation where that person, for different reasons, some not even their fault, did not position themselves to receive the care that they need.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you don't know what that's like. Like, you don't know that dementia is the card that you pull.
Yeah.
And so now you require a certain level of care.
Yeah.
Like, so you don't fault the person for that. It's not their fault.
No.
But how do you manage care? Because we aren't primary caregivers. When we try to be, if we can, but sometimes you just can't. Like, you can't lift a person up to go to the bathroom. Like, that's
it. So it asks a lot of you. And again, I really feel like this is just such a powerful conversation, because people might not say that because they're trying to guard the dignity of the person that they're caring for. Mm-hmm. And then, just like caring for a child, you don't want to feel like you can't do it.
Yeah.
You no one wants to feel like an ineffective parent. No one wants to feel like a child that can't serve their parent.
Right.
Or like I'm saying, your elder. Because like my plan has got to be different. You know what I'm saying? But you can coordinate care. I just want to get people to understand, like, you have to begin to talk about what it is that you need, because the same people who need care now were the same people voting for things that came out of their safety net.
Mm-hmm.
So many people need it for a long time, or even currently, the boomer generation was the most populous generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was people having babies left and right after a war. And now, or during their younger years, they might have voted for, you know, take the funding out of this, strip the funding out of that, because they weren't using it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need it. Now that they are the ones in need, it's like, well, where do I get a healthcare aid from? You know, where do I get a CNA from? Where do I do? And I'm like, in the Medicaid that you decided didn't need full funding 40 years ago, right? And it's not so much, again, about blaming them, but there is an intersection between, and we've talked about this, you vote different when it's not when it's not affecting you. You might make different decisions when it's not affecting you.
So I think at the point where they realize that they don't have what they need for whatever the reason, I think they know that. And I think there may be some shame attached to it if they know that. But we're still here. We got to manage this. So how do we kind of work through the gap or that delta between the care that they can afford and the care that they need.
So one of the things that you want to get assistance with is basically doing a needs survey of what the person needs. Because like you said, everybody's not presenting the same. There are some super active seniors out here. The house is paid off or they already made decisions. Everything's on one floor. They might have already provided care to somebody. So they have equipment that they might need in the future. So you want to take the time to assess what is even needed because your care plan won't work if it's full of stuff that you can't use. Yeah. And then you want to prioritize where those needs come from. The other thing you want to do is take a full assessment of any insurances that the person is holding, that the elder is holding. Long-term care insurance has provisions in it for long-term care, meaning a dementia diagnosis that that person is not going to just turn around 48 hours. You know what I'm saying? It's done with. Dementia could take years to come into formation and to affect the elder. This is just an example, or something like cancer or heart disease or something like that. And as their abilities change, you want to know if the protections that you're carrying are actually being maximized. So who can help you figure that out? A financial planner can help you go over the terms and conditions of the things that you're holding. In just about every state, there is an office, a government apparatus for aging services. If you connect to that apparatus, 9 times out of 10, you can connect to a care supports planner or somebody who can kind of help walk you through what do you need to consider, you know, if you're saying, okay, dad got to stay with me or mom has to stay with me, you know, how do we make the call between home care and maybe a rehab or assisted living, and where do those costs come from?
So we're Black, and I am fortunate to have the father that I have who does not carry with him the, I don't know how to say it, the secrecy of your finances. Like, they don't want people in their business. So it's for people who don't even want their children in their business. I can see the difficulty in having a conversation to invite in another person, a financial advisor, whatever, to say, all right, let's expose all of this to see what it is, and then let's talk about it and figure out how to get through it.
Because that's
the generation that we're dealing with, is the people that...
And they learn that from their elders.
Right.
Mind your business, right? But I would just encourage everybody to be honest about what happened when they were cut out of those conversations from a previous generation. Did you lose property? Did you lose access to cash? Did old beefs, you know, old feelings come up, old animosities come up that really stopped a family unit from being as effective as it needed to be when it came to planning care or planning for transition? And we need to say those things like very plainly, because everybody thinks their situation is unique. You know, like, I know we should be talking about it, but see, you don't know my sister. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't care. What I can tell you is, you can't afford some of the mess that keeps you from communicating. And this is a two-way street. So you don't ever want it to be, you know, we've talked about gentrification and lack of wealth transfer within our community. That should not be going down for anything that's treatable, right? So treatable is, to me, overcoming the superstition of what it means to prepare for your final years, where some people don't want to do a will because they think that they're inviting death, you know, quicker. No. What you're doing is you're making sure that everything that you worked for doesn't go up in smoke or end up being owned by the government because you were so afraid to die. Everybody's going to die. Everybody's going to die. And I'm not saying that like it doesn't stump me, like it doesn't stop me, but you don't want to be doing all of this because this is somebody's life. You don't want to be doing all of it for nothing. So it's not so much, oh, I'm going to get the house, but you definitely don't want to lose the wealth that you've built in your assets because you can't talk to one another. We talked about, you know, that takes us to just relationship. You know, I get calls all the time where people are like, you know, my dad is here and I can't do it. I can't do it. They're not saying they can't do it because they're not strong enough to lift him up out of his bed. Or, you know, my mom is here and, you know, I've had enough. She needs a place to stay. They're not saying that because she requires the highest level of care. Mm-hmm. They're saying that because they are being confronted with aspects of the relationship mm-hmm. that are hard to overcome, probably on both sides. To not only be able to give the care, but to be able to receive it. That's not just about service. That's mm-hmm. about respect. That's about dignity. That's about vulnerability. And those are the things that sometimes get lost when we're talking about what it even means to show up for somebody mm-hmm. as they're aging. For those things that can be treated, I'm always going to encourage you to treat it because you probably can't afford the alternative.
Yeah.
Right. So like, it's not like, because people be like, oh, they can go to assisted living. Not if they don't need it. Mm. They don't need the bed. They ain't going to get it. So you can't go to assisted living because you got a bad attitude.
Yeah.
You can't go to assisted living because you lost your house. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, and this is just one aspect of it, but these are the things that we have to consider, because by the time you call me, you're trying to fight against the fact that providing care might be something that you either feel overwhelmed to do or you just don't want to do it.
Yeah, so that's a complex issue, because you could be dealing with a parent or aging parent that has been an asshole to you their
Absolutely.
Whole life and
Absolutely.
Now they need your help.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could have been that absent child that ain't show up for nothing
mm-hmm.
and now they need you to help. And you are who you are.
So we can't, and we would never be able to tackle all of that right now. But the one thing that I can say about it is, if you can work on it, work on it.
So that's independent of the finances and everything that needs
yeah.
to happen. It's the actual relational issues that are impacting care.
So personal, you know, my personal experience with this, having helped my father years ago and helped my grandmother recently. My father, I was a younger woman, and everything probably up until that time was more rose-colored glasses. I was daddy's little girl, so it was like whatever I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And even that was tempered by circumstances in my life. I was in college. I didn't drive at the time. And I have sisters. I had sisters at the time. Another sibling was incarcerated. So everybody couldn't even contribute the same way. But
yeah.
we all, you know, we were trying, but there was only one sibling who was local to him, who I know carried the brunt of his care,
mm-hmm.
right? We had to work that out relationship-wise on the back end, because we didn't understand. Yeah,
yeah,
we didn't understand, you know, the burden that she took on. Now, helping my grandmother, who had 8 children, mm-hmm. okay, four of which were living at the time, by the time everything transitioned, you talking about all hands on deck,
mm-hmm.
people being able to, you know, pick what they could do consistently. And now, again, taking back that self-care aspect, now you know to go to respite so that you can take your vacation days, because you can't do this work every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know to maximize your opportunity, just sit with her and talk with her and work some stuff out. You know, I found myself talking to other family members about the feelings that I probably didn't anticipate coming up that were rooted in my childhood. But when they came up, I had better tools to work that stuff out so that I could get out of my own way. Because what is important to me is family,
mm-hmm.
right? I have a set of values.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this woman and I'm saying, you did the best you could.
You are making a good argument for intergenerational housing, because you can't do all, when it's time for someone that needs care, whether
yeah.
it's a young child or aging or someone that's aging,
mm-hmm.
It is a benefit to have a house full of people.
Now, it is.
Now, when you know, everybody don't need their own yard to mow. You know what
no.
I mean? Everybody don't need their own space. Now, you do need your own space, and
mm-hmm.
I can see why we do that.
Mm-hmm.
But with the way that things are, with people retiring later, living longer, and that is into
mm-hmm.
illness and things like that. And then, you know, with having children, things like that, well, it makes sense to be in that house together and maybe suffering with, you know, the lack of privacy, you know, you and
their trade-offs.
Yeah, kids like, mommy, what's that? What's that? Are you okay?
Shh.
Yeah, so you know, down the hall from your parents.
Lord.
Like, y'all all right?
Yeah. Listen.
So anyway, the point that you brought up is really important about the impact on the siblings. Like you said, not everyone can be in the same place. Some people live in a different state, you know, mm-hmm. you have different situations. Mm-hmm. And it can be just a blind spot like you described for that the care that's needed, and then you're stuck with people who you feel like didn't show up for you.
Listen,
and things
it's
like
gonna
that.
Come up.
So you gotta deal with, if you lose that person, you gotta deal with the loss, and then you gotta deal with the fracture mm-hmm. in the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's tough.
It's a lot, but my thing is, it's gonna happen anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get to keep the person living to avoid the fallout of their death. That's not gonna happen. Or the fallout of what it means to have to provide care for them. And when I say we can't afford it, nobody's getting ready to sell their house.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Like, if the house is needed to house other people, you're not getting ready to sell that property. But that's what some of these programs are going to ask you to do to demonstrate that you really need their money versus your own. Mm-hmm. Right? So how do you overcome this? Our African-American experience, our hyphenated experience in this country, I always feel like there's just richness in going back and figuring out how things were done before we got so smart, before we got so much access to do certain things. How do we weave this back into, you know, why is Faith Uncut talking about this? Because your churches should be helping, right? One of the first things that I tell a person when they come across my desk is how to hold the institutions that they've upheld accountable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because no congregation that has a significant amount of elders should not have elder-centered programming, right? Even if it means, you know, some of it is celebratory, mm-hmm. senior day, or
yeah, yeah.
you know, celebrating the church mothers or the fathers or whatever's going on. That's cool, because that has value for emotional health, mental health, feeling mm-hmm. appreciated. And that, to me, I know this isn't a real term, but it's like pre-ancestral veneration.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving people flowers while they're here,
right?
Now, if your congregation is some of the ones that we've ever been, you know, able to observe or even be party to, some of the investments that could have been made over time is for, like, housing. Seniors have housing needs that we don't always think about, again, because they can't do all the steps
yeah.
or lack of financial planning or one big financial hit, especially when one spouse goes and the other one is still here. If it was a long-term diagnosis or a very expensive diagnosis, you might find yourself having to downsize into
yeah.
a senior apartment. You know, how do they get in there? The senior housing products that I work with are for higher-end buyers.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to realize, because I was broke, but I had to realize that everybody wouldn't be in my situation where they had to sell one to do the other. There are actually products out here that help you hedge your bets healthcare-wise, right? So you say, cancer runs in my family, or heart disease runs in my family, some mm-hmm. sort of diabetes runs in my family, whatever it is. I'm going to invest in this housing healthcare hybrid product.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to live here for 20 years. The entry fee is $500,000. The monthly fee is $5,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to know that the vacancy rates are always under 10%, because people are hedging their bets that when it comes time for them to need care,
mm-hmm.
they are basically on college campuses for seniors, where these are like private hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to compete for assisted living beds. They don't have to compete for rehab beds, right? They have a unit. They have something that looks like a nice condo.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's on one level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could do their own laundry if they feel like it, but if they don't feel like it, they can do that. My thing is, who got $500,000 and $5,000 a month on top of what we're already doing?
Yeah.
So this is one of the ways, actually, you know, when I saw it, I was like, this is a problem. This is the continuation of redlining. Like, I'm always looking
yeah.
at stuff differently, because even when we sell our homes, we are not going to get what the next owner gets for picking it up.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So you can't go and drive past that new fancy smanchy senior living community and think, oh, my mama going in there. No, she ain't.
That stuff is expensive.
And she definitely not going in there if she don't have no pension, if she was doing 401k and everything was a safe investment. You know, she not going in there if she needs your help and y'all not speaking. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it would be good for churches to have educational programming also in addition to some of the other things that help them, the pre-ancestral veneration programs. Because, I mean, truth be told, you don't know if your pastor has a retirement plan.
Listen
and
to
so
me.
There's a lot of people that's in the pulpit at 80.
There are a lot of people.
Theology ain't changed, doing harm, and just shouldn't even be up there because they didn't.
Because it's easier to tell somebody what to do than to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even sitting here right now, I'm like, for real, make sure you do this, this, and this, because I just learned the hard way. And thankfully, as a family, we worked out the relationship stuff years ago. Mm. That helped us be able to do what we needed to do when we needed to do it. Like, I realized my little cousins don't know some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. They were young. They were either kids or they weren't even here yet. But from my purview, because I always say I'm the youngest of the oldest cousins or I'm the oldest of the youngest cousins. I'm right in the middle. Mm-hmm. I was able to see where my grandmother pivoted as the leader of the family. Mm-hmm. That made all the difference in the world when it came to her last 5 years of life. Mm. Because everything we did for her was sincere. We had finally lavished upon each other as people the love and the forgiveness that it was. We a black family in an urban environment, so we already know what we're talking about. We're talking about how the war on drugs and its many facets affects a family. We're talking about how female single led households, you know, what the outcomes could be for various children and grandchildren or whatever. We're talking about living in urban environments with economic instability. All right, all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Without putting anybody out there. But I also know not only was it my grandmother's faith, but it was her determination, right? And we just follow her lead. We're a loving family. We're not rich. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. what we got. Like, people be like, how you do that? We love that lady. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, even with, and that example, what I've been able to help, like, the surviving children with is, one, I get the self-care. I'm normalizing the conversation for therapy. Mm-hmm. Right. Because we talk about that like, my therapist is the bomb. We're not shaming each other. We're not, mm-hmm. you know, we're not like, oh, my God, you crazy. We don't do that. So imagine having that conversation with your elder who still has time enough to get out some of that scar tissue and pivot so that you can serve with a cheerful heart. God loves a cheerful giver. That's how you're going to get there.
Yeah. That's so important that y'all handle that stuff earlier, because you do not want to be in a situation where somebody has a diagnosis and they require all of this lift. And you
not
you,
only
you
that gotta,
well, first, let me talk about, you know, this situation.
Listen,
I can't
you
help
sound
you
ridiculous.
Until you, you mean, until you understand what you did to me.
And your shit is valid, though. Like, your feelings are valid. Timing is everything, and circumstances do matter. Yeah. Right. So what I felt like, even for me, was that it came up, but it was a new opportunity for me to mature in an area. You got to put some of the stuff away. Like, what you going to do with it?
Yeah.
For real. Because at the end of the day, I was like, nothing was more important than preparing her to transition. I need her to be able to hear my prayers. My grandmother's prayers cover me. So when I think about, and then I had to understand, and I just hope that this helps somebody. When you realize that Your people are literally just people. Like, mm-hmm. we've assigned them roles and labels, yeah. but they just people. And when I gave womanhood back to my mother and grandmother, my life changed.
Yeah.
My life changed. So now I look at that as a continuation. I look at that as a lineage. And I'm just saying, I just want to be as good or better than the women who came before me. It is my honor. And I said this at my grandmother's funeral. It's my highest honor to serve my mother, serving her mother. Mm. You can't get there holding some of this stuff in your heart. Regardless of all the other things that you might be called to do, mm-hmm. in any relationship, ultimately we're talking about the heart work. Like, how are you supposed to do it? Because if you can't do it for your elder, I'm not quite sure how you're going to pull it off for your spouse. Real shit.
Yeah. Wow. So what other type of resources do we have in the community to help us help them? Because it's one of those things where you're going to reach your limit no matter who you think you are. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, you can do all the self-care you need. You can have all the resources you need, but you're going to hit a wall.
Yeah.
And you're going to need some help.
So One is holding the like I said, the institutions that you've upheld, hold them accountable. So even if your faith, your churches don't have these things fleshed out, you got to ask the questions, because it gets to a point, how do I really serve the needs of the parishioners? And increasingly, you're going to need the mental health and emotional support for caregiving, as well as maybe some of the more tangible things like transportation, housing, even employment opportunities. Like we're saying, some of our seniors, they can still contribute. They can still do something. Just because they're older doesn't mean that they can't work, or that they don't want to, or that they don't want to, you know, augment their income, their monthly income on Social Security, whatever it might be. So one, you go to the places that you've been propping up. Two, your local county governments usually have an office on aging. It is the endpoint for federal and state dollars for senior care. This should be a resource that you should be able to find people who can help you do that needs assessment, what type of care is needed, people who can help you find resources in the community, like apartments that might have senior discounts, or, you know, give consideration to different applicants. Other housing needs, like if I was a private homeowner and I had a unit in my house, I could register it with that local office on aging so that only a senior or priority a senior could be in my home, because maybe I have a ramp or I have a bathroom with the bars in it or whatever. So you want to call them or reach out to them and just figure out what resources are in your community. There are a lot of private providers too. Everything is not go to the government, because of course the government has different requirements, and a lot of them are income based. In this area, a lot of our seniors do not income qualify for government support. They make too much on the old federal pensions or like the old school pensions, when you think about the biggest employers of Black folk in this area. So you want to assess who's in your community that's like doing companion care, because we got to go to work, right? So there are companies that offer transportation to senior daycares, or provide in-home senior services. They're able to kind of sit with your people until you're able to, you know, get home. And a whole host of things like exercise or new hobbies, or providing transportation to medical appointments and things. These things exist. But I would think that the main door is figuring out on a state or county level who is doing senior care services. You also need to know that just about every state agency has a special program that they host for seniors that might not come under senior care. So like if you're talking about, how do I get a ramp built, or how do I get those bars in my bathroom because I want to age in place, that might not come straight under your office on aging. You might find that they refer you to like housing and community development, who is getting money from HUD to provide these services in the community for senior homeowners, right? So we would read it differently. So offices on aging are ultimately powered by Health and Human Services. The other services that aging Americans might need might be powered by those specific, you know, large cabinets. But how does it filter down through your state? So the main door is an office on aging. But when you think about what you're asking for, like, oh, yo, my mom is interested in getting an associate's degree. Well, who do I call? First, you call the community college. 9 times out of 10, they're hosting a grant that ultimately comes from Department of Labor or Department of Education for senior education or workforce development. So that's how it works.
Okay. The last thing we need to cover is our preparation, because unlike the previous generation, we didn't have a ton of kids. And our children are not our plan. We need a different plan.
Yes.
We need to make sure that we are planning for our retirement and then end of life care and what comes in between, whether that's unexpected or you can foresee what that challenge is going to be.
Right.
Yeah. I just, it's one of those things we got to think of. If we haven't been thinking about it already, we have to think about it with some urgency at this point. Does your profession offer protections and planning for you? If not, then some of that money needs to go towards that care, so that the one or two children that you have, instead of the 7 to 9,
right,
one or
maybe
two children.
Maybe you got four.
Right, because you figure 7 to 9, you know, only a few of them show up. You got one or two, you might not have nobody come.
And my thing is, you know, even when you're at work and you're putting together a team, people in management will tell you who like teach other people how to manage. They'll be like, look at the team and see who's the anchor. See who's the person who's going to get it done. 9 out of 10, that's how siblings operate too.
Yeah.
There's going to be a person who's like the recorder. There's going to be a person who's like the speaker, right? The speaker might not have done the research. So, and you don't want it to be how some of us felt with group work. I did everything.
Right.
Right. So being able to
do nothing, climbing in the casket.
Listen, listen, doing the most. And you might find, again, like we're just having a conversation about a different aspect of life. So some of these skills are transferable. You might have to delegate.
Mm-hmm.
You might have to, again, manage a team. You might have to assign according to strengths, not how they see themselves, but really how their performance data, you know, shows up. The other thing is what you say we have to do. I'm huge on making sure that we put our mask on first. I've said this before. Put your mask on first. This is the time to consider whether or not this is the life and the lifestyle that you can sustain.
Mm-hmm.
And all that that might mean. So we don't want to put off, you know, pursuing our dreams. We don't want to put off going for that promotion. We don't want to put off the travel that we want to do. You got to get some of that stuff out of the way because you don't know if somebody else can do that for you. This is the type of stuff that eats your heart up as your abilities change, right? So you don't want these things sitting undone.
Yeah.
The other thing is, again, it's easy to tell people what to do than to do it. If you need support with confronting how you feel about your aging process and your preparation, all I can do is encourage you to get that assistance, not least of which is the personal assistance of the counseling, because a lot of it is in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of how we feel about our finances and what that says about us and, you know, how other people view us has to do with self-identity, self-esteem, being able to demonstrate how we love ourselves financially. This is something that I've talked to my therapist about. Like, I would like to, because everybody's like, love yourself. And a lot of us are just really now learning and unlearning what love is. There is a way to love yourself financially. What are you doing all this work for?
Yeah.
Like, do your homework. And this is coming from somebody who hates homework. You know what I mean? But do your work and normalize this conversation so that we're not constantly starting over and over and over again.
Like, we're in the surprise years, though. Like, these are the years where your body, you think you can do those things, and your body's like, nah. You know what I mean? Like, I went to lift something about 4 weeks ago. I'm still feeling the effects of that. Like, I just scheduled a appointment with my doctor. I was like, wait, I should have been able to lift that. Like, you can't drop down like they was doing on that video. That duck walk is over. Like, you can't do that stuff no more. So
this is true.
As we're learning, you know, we're late understanding that we're in the process of changing. Our bodies are cycling down. You know what I mean? So all of this is critical information for, and I'm glad that you recommended that we had this conversation because this is a necessary conversation.
It is. And we'll probably revisit. We haven't touched on a lot of stuff, but I think this was a good enough overview and let's just get into it because if you're going to enjoy these years, enjoy them. You know what I mean? Yeah. But you got to do your work. You got to do some of the work. It'll help you enjoy it a little bit better.
All right, y'all, for Faith Uncut, I'm yours, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.